Well, we do have Matt on. He's just having trouble.
Okay, here we go.
You get it?
Got it? Okay.
Yes, thank you very much.
Good evening.
Good evening. We started the meeting.
Okay.
And what I'd like to do is start by doing the approval of minutes, which Justin and Kevin are here for the one for 25th of November.
I was here for that.
Yes. I've read them. You guys can't read them.
Yes. Yeah, I have no
objection. I don't have any problems here. So, and we have a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the November
25th
minutes.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, those are approved. Do we have Matt on yet?
Yes, we do have him. Matt, can you can you hear us? I can't hear you. He is there.
I think they should have a screen here so we can see the people we're talking to. And it isn't that expensive.
Matt, can you? Matt is just connected to the audio.
Yeah.
I think he's trying to connect through, so let's see what happens.
Okay, well, you know, I've read through the minutes of the last meeting, the 27th. I don't know if we need to have Matt to approve it, but it would be good to have him to do so.
It says he's connecting to the audio, so.
Okay.
I know people have been having trouble with this. I think it's, like I said, a two-step process. So.
Okay. Well, Mr. Fitzsimmons, do you have any issues with the minutes?
I do not, no. I'll make a motion that we accept the minutes from January
27th. Jim, Matt said that he's waiting for you to let him in.
I have him as unmuted, so.
Well, that.
He's on the phone. The 788 phone number is him.
Oh, okay. All right, I didn't realize that. Okay, if he unmutes his, Matt, if you unmute yourself now for the 878, it's muted at your end. If you can let him know that, Trish, I have him unmuted. So, I asked him to unmute. Yeah, I know this is frustrating when you're in that position. I don't know what the steps are to.
There isn't something there on your end that you can.
I already did that. I can mute him and unmute him. I unmuted him, so now he should be able to. He just got unmuted his end. I say that like I. Boy, that's easy to do.
So, it can be very frustrating.
We had problems last night, people, or Monday night, the planning board meeting, people getting in.
Not that I know much about it, Jim, but on my computer, if I right-click on the screen, it'll bring up selections that include audio, and that could be muted.
Okay, so you hear that, Matt? Right-click on your screen and see if you can unmute that way. Well, Matt wrote in and said, please continue, and I'll chime in. He'll chime in if he can.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we basically have agreed. The folks over here at the last meeting, myself and Justin and Scott, that we don't have any problems with these minutes.
Nope, not at all.
So I'll make a motion that we approve that.
Second.
Okay. Minutes for the 27th day of January. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Matt, if you object to that. No. But we do have a vote. So that should cover. And if Matt, if you really want to add something to those minutes, we can open it back up here next meeting. Do you want to wait for Jim to come back? Assistance with this. Our next order of business is appeal number 6 or 835. I'm not going to read it again because that hasn't changed. We tabled this at our last meeting and requested some more information from the applicant. So now we do have more information. Can we describe what it is we have?
Okay, we'll do. I'm Gary Robinson, of course, and I represent Dental Contracting. I thought I'd just go over the revisions we did on the plan and explain what they are and why we did it. The first one we did was we prepared a draft of a shared easement or a shared access agreement, and we should have got that with the application. And there's about one page, really. The second page is the one that talks mostly, I guess some on the first page, talks about the different things that they have, the responsibilities that the residents may have, being a part owner in that easement, and the responsibility for maintenance and ownership. I'm thinking if you guys have questions on it, we can go over it later. I'll just run through all the changes we made. Start. Second thing, we added a note on the plan for the common drives that just said that if you were going to buy a lot in here, that there would be a common drive that you would be part of. We added a detail. We added on the road that would be that common driveway. We went into the building code and did make that compliant with the fire code in New York State. It starts off at 20 foot wide, and then from the hydrant that's back there, it's 26 foot wide, and then we added a T turnaround at the end that's back to being 20 foot wide. It all complies with the state code. You can see a little more detail up right of the plan where I just blew it up so you could get a clear idea of where everything was. And I did note on there that it complies with all of the requirements. Let's see, the third thing, we added a note regarding the gun club. I think Mr. Brody was on, and he just asked that we make sure that everyone realizes that the gun club has been there for a long time. And it is, we could probably continue, and it shouldn't be deemed objectionable. We put that note down here, our title left.
If I could interrupt here just for a second, I think we finally got Matt through. Matt, are you there? need a microphone. Matt?
You guys here?
Yeah, I can hear you, Matt. Yep.
Yeah, I had switched computers to get a different setup. I was called in on my cell phone. For some reason, the audio still doesn't work. It's kind of strange. So I apologize for the inconvenience, everyone.
No problem.
Nope. And by the way, to the record, Trish, he did write in via chat here that he approved, he voted yes on the minutes.
Okay.
Just to put get that on the record. So we're all square now. Sorry, Gary. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's all right. We added a detail on the curb cut. What it is there's actually DOT has a standard for doing commercial and residential curb cuts, and there's a little design involved in it. And we actually did that design and put that detail on. It's in the center and the bottom of the finish sheet. We added a cross section to the paved road that we've used in the past for to support the 75,000 pound fire vehicles. And we were asked to get letters from people, and I kind of like to go over that now, just the different people that I talked to. Not so easy to get letters. Not so easy to get a hold of everybody or the right person. But I tried to do a summary of it there. I had talked to everybody that we were thinking we needed to talk to. Plus, I also talked to Jesse. We hadn't been able to talk about that before. But with DOT, I think you guys probably got the copy of the DOT comments. What they're saying is that their common driveway allowance is up to 4. And the ones we've done, I guess, because I've done 4 or 5 that are more than 4 blocks. But it must not be on the state highway. So what we did to resolve that, the main entrance is still designed exactly to the residential entrance. They can take up the 4 lots. And what we did, there's actually a curb cut that exists on 197. It goes into this lot. It is shown on our original plan. On the revised plan, it actually showed that we would put in a 12-foot wide driveway at that curb cut. I did put in an email to her to try to contact with her today, which she didn't get back to me. But at any rate, when we get to a point where we have to build something, we would have to get a permit from them. So it's really, they don't normally give us anything besides what they give at this point on her letter. I talked to the fire department chief, Pete Corlew. I scheduled to try to get together with him, but at his job, he's had a lot of issues with some of the homes that he deals with, and we weren't ever able to get together, but I had sent him a copy of our plans, and he looked it all over. He said he talked to a couple of the other fire people, and he said they're 100%. They said, this is great. It's just what we would want. So you're good to go as far as the work is.
And on that note, Gary, I did speak with Kathy Perez in the building department today. She had a call from Peter Corlew just to confirm that same outcome. Peter's agreeing with the plan. As long as it meets state specification for access to emergency vehicles, he's fine with it.
Okay. I talked to the highway superintendent, and just talking to him because we were talking about considering a cul-de-sac in the United States and why we didn't choose to do a cul-de-sac. And I was saying that Paul would likely say that he's not interested in a cul-de-sac and that he would prefer a private drive, which he did confirm that today. We did talk about some other reasons why he wouldn't want one there. And he said, and I don't know this, but he was telling me that the cul-de-sac radius expanded. And he said, you may not have enough room there anyway. And he said, but we don't like, it's so short, and for 5 lots, he said, we'd be fine, we wouldn't want you to do that. And one of the things that we did just in passing was not having the cul-de-sac actually reduces the amount of pavement that we would have on the site. And I know Jim knows that when we're talking about stormwater on sites, you know, whenever you can reduce the impervious area on the site, that's a good thing. So, just another point. And then I talked to Jesse. We had, when I was talking to the fire chief, he said, I see you have a hydrant there. And I said, yeah. And I said, he goes, we want to talk to Jesse. And I said, okay. So I called Jesse. And we talked quite a bit. And Jesse was concerned that it might be a private, might be considered a private hydrant. And I told him that wasn't what we were thinking. We were thinking that it would be a town hydrant and we would have an easement. And I said, we're not sure that it's not required. I did check in the Penn State standards and it's not required to have a hydrant in there. And I said, you know, to tell the truth, we didn't really talk, when I talked to Pete Corlew, we didn't really talk about whether he would want a hydrant. I just said that, you know, the owner had told me that they thought they would put a hydrant in the end, take their services off, the line went out to the hydrant. And when I talked to Jesse, he said, you know, he goes, I don't think you're going to want to do that. And he goes, we didn't do that in that McKenna project that was over on 32. He said what he did was he tapped off our main line, just ran services into all the houses, instead of putting a hydrant back where the houses were.
I think McKenna put a hydrant out by the roadside.
Yeah, and we have one. There's an existing hydrant that's about 20 feet west of our driveway that goes in that common drive. So there is a hydrant within. It's about 400 feet from that hydrant into the end of the road. So it's not required by anyone. Jesse didn't say he was interested. I talked to the owners today, and they said, you know, we can go either way, but we were just like thinking that somebody would mind. And I said, well, you know, we can talk about that at planning board and see what planning board thinks. You know, we'll go from there. But Jesse did say that if we were going to put a hydrant in because the fire department felt it was his term, that he would recommend that it be taken over by the town and the town do the maintenance. And I think those are all the things that I had to do. And I don't know if you guys have any questions, comments, but I'm all ears.
So the plan is to put water to these houses. It will be town water. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. There's a water line that is on our side of Route 197.
And the business about the other driveway, that's where it says the existing earthen drive on the plan?
Yes.
So lot number 5 would not be served by the shared driveway, is that correct?
Correct.
It would not, no.
And again, that existing is 12 foot wide? Is that what you had said? I'm sorry?
What I said was we would put, normally people have driveways that are 12 feet wide. That driveway, when that comes in off the road, it's about 17 feet wide. Where it comes in off the road. So
you would keep it?
Normally people with a driveway, you know, that's something that the builder does, and they negotiate that with the builder when they get in. I mean, we I don't know if you can tell the plan. What we did is we kept it the same width up into the property line. And then we show it coming out at 12 feet at the property line.
Okay.
So you don't have any storm drains in there? You got a brand new hydrant, brand new water?
We're bringing water. There could be drainage that would be along the shared driveway. It would go into the existing drainage ditch in the front. And just, it's a little past, it's probably about 50 feet west of where we have our common driveway mount, that there's a cross culvert. It's a 24-inch cross culvert, I think, that goes across the road and the drainage goes down the other side. So we would put a culvert under our driveways, and of course that would go to DOT after we have planning board approval or their approval.
Well, I
know that we moved the pitch to it. You don't have a pitch, we don't have any concrete gutter or weak walls or anything like that, so you're going to actually have a, you can do the culvert. You can do a French drain to it, or else you can get to the culvert. I don't see any structures here.
Well, the grade will be, we don't have the topo on that plan yet, but the grade, it'll be graded down. That site needs some felt, so it's going to be graded down to the road, and so there will be a longitudinal slope on the road that comes from the back down to the front.
So yeah, just bear in mind, if this were to get approval, this has to go back to the planning board for subdivision, and at that time you're going to get into a grading plan, and there'll be a soil and an erosion control plan as well, at least at that juncture.
And I assume all in that road construction, the 3-inch binder on the top total, I'm not sure what the rules and parameters are, but I assume we look at that too.
Yes. Yep, they will.
Yeah. You got it, the right drawing, it's going to meet the 75,000 pound vehicle.
Right.
I guess my biggest concerns are that we've got some of these. I know that we did the one over with the counter. I believe that one, there was a piece of that property that every one of those lots touched the road. Am I incorrect in that?
That one did. There have been.
Well, in the past, there was other ones, yes.
Yeah, but the kind of makeup was such that they could make that work.
And we've also sat in and had meetings about houses that they wanted to run renovations to that were on pre-existing shared driveways. There's been issues. It's not something that the town really wants, I don't believe. I mean, I don't think this is something that it's not in our zoning. It's not in our laws for the town. And I think that's for a reason. As much as you can do all kinds of legal documents, it's the people that live there that make the difference. And it can be a very troublesome circumstance. I have big concerns with shared drivers.
I can tell you of the ones that we've done in the past, we haven't had issues, but I can see where, you know, and you can see in the document that the attorney talks about what to do no matter what happens. He's got everything covered.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that becomes an issue. It also says in there because, you know, we've heard from towns that, you know, we want to make sure they know that it has nothing to do with us. And we also, there's some, I see a section in there where he has a note on that that says, you know, this has nothing to do with the town. And also, if you look at the DOT girls' comments, they also reviewed the draft ownership and maintenance agreement to make sure that it meets their requirements, too, which we think that it does. But should we look at that when we go to actually get a permit for that to come out to the state highway?
I think we
covered it as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think about how many of these we have in the town.
I know of two.
At least two.
I know of at least three. We have one on the
We have, there's one off of Route 9.
Then
that was before my time.
Okay, there's one off of Route 9, so actually there's four.
And there's one,
one
off of Route 32 there, subdivision.
And then there's one down off of Peter Dam. That was the one that we had the issue with down by the river.
Oh, down the end, yeah.
That's a shared.
you know, from my standpoint, you know, as a planner, I used to be, you know, these things used to get a chilly reception to me, but I've since warmed to them, you know, since if the proper precautions and procedures are put in place, it is workable. And, you know, is it a town-maintained access way? No, it is not. On the other hand, too, the town doesn't have to take on that cost and that responsibility either. But on the positive side, it does result in less curb cuts, you know, along the road.
Right.
But correspondingly, you could put in the town road and you'd have the same effect. In my mind, I've warmed up to them as long as they're properly executed. In other words, the easements are properly recorded in the deeds, the maintenance agreement's in place, and from the public's concern that we do have the public safety element addressed in terms of, you know, the accessibility of the driveway is properly constructed and the fire department's, you know, on board with it.
And if we see that the roadway becomes deteriorated and has big potholes in it and there's issues like that for the fire department, then how would we handle that?
Well,
it's town. I mean, if the five people living there say, it's fine with me, it's not bad with me, I can drive slow, what do we do?
Well, I do think there would be, it would have to be pretty, it would have to be fall into pretty poor condition, but I do think you could enforce the subdivision plat at that time. You know, because the subdivision plat is going to have this driveway cross-section on it. It's going to be portraying that a standard of the driveway has to be in place, and if it's not, you know, I think that could be enforceable.
I can appreciate your concerns. You guys have a lot more experience with this than I do. But I feel like your primary concern would be the legality should there arise a situation where this thing falls into a state of disrepair or could be a safety hazard.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, to be fully upfront, when I had stone volumes this year ago, I actually plowed one of the roads in here that's a shared driveway. And even back then, that was a very big problem. Some people paid, some people didn't. There was, well, how do you get it straightened out? Yes, what I'm saying is you can have all kinds of legal documents.
Right.
The legal documents are only good for you to go to court.
Right.
And that could take you a year, that could take you 2 years, and I think the reason the town has hurt and steered away from shared driveways is because of those very real problems.
Understood.
You know, I'm inclined to agree with Kevin in terms of the shared driveway. It's if we get into a lot of these kinds of things, and I don't want to see us do it, because what happens is that we've had people come to us and they say, well, we need this fixed, we need this prepared, we need this done, because and we have to say that it's not the town's responsibility. It's somebody else, it's your builder, or you have a covenant with with your neighbors to do this. But, you know, they're not doing it. Well, what are you going to do about it? We can't do anything.
Right.
Whereas if this is a town road, then they do have recourse. And you know what? I mean, philosophically, if you start putting in all these private domains in this town, why the hell would anybody want to pay taxes to the town? I mean, you know, why would I want to? Well, I don't get any benefit from the highway department. Why do I want to? You know, and it's just, you know, I mean, that's the extreme. But, I mean, but we have had people come, you know, and it is, well, you should fix this road. Well, we can't. It's a private road. And that is an issue. And I think that's, you know, private roads, I don't want to see us get into too many private roads. So my question to you, Gary, is, I mean, I think you explained this somewhat at the last meeting, but I was on Zoom and I was having a hard time catching it. Why not a cul-de-sac? I know that the highway superintendent would prefer not to, but why not from the builder's standpoint?
Why does he want to have a common drive?
No, why don't you folks want to build a town road and have a cul-de-sac?
Right.
Well, a couple reasons. Number one, I think there would be more, I think there would be some people that live adjacent to the back. If you look at where that lot is, there's houses along the road that's just above it.
Okay, so at the end of that road, where this little thing says see detail in a sheet, that's a property with a house on it?
And again.
Okay, if you look at our drawing here that we have in front of us, and you go to the end of that shared drive, then you've got some property lines, and you've got a couple of properties back, three properties actually. Are they all properties with houses on them already?
They are, yes.
Okay.
So the cul-de-sac, so if he was to put a cul-de-sac, it would have to be back further into here.
So your space
is that the people that are on those lots would be unhappy having the road both in the front and the back of it. And if we put this road in, this would be private. It's just a common driveway. So there wouldn't be traffic that would come in and out of here routinely. Whereas if it was a cul-de-sac, anybody could come in and out of it routinely.
But I don't see that as a, I don't see that. I mean, you're not going to have a sign, a big sign up in front of it that says private property can't drive in. I don't think you. So I can't imagine people would drive into a shared driveway anymore, or into a road anymore than they would a shared driveway if it's just got four or five houses on it.
Right.
Well, the road is going to have a sign, street sign. And it's going to look like a public road, but. I'm just saying, this is what we talked about when we were doing this. We looked at other alternatives, and, the cul-de-sac, like I say, I know the town. I don't think the town would be interested in taking it. I know Paul isn't, just because it's a small area, it only serves a couple of houses. Most of the cul-de-sacs that are in the town are in a road that goes ways back.
Well, we've got one right on 197, right now by the river. It's got four houses on it.
Yeah.
Then it's a cul-de-sac.
Yeah, I don't think that's so much a problem, but it sounds, what you're saying is that it would take up more property on these lots that you've already got.
Right.
Right.
That's a
whole component, too. Yeah.
It would definitely take up more property on the lots. There'd be drainage that the town would have to maintain. You would have a main line. I don't know if blend up with that hydrant, but you probably would have a main water line that came up into that area. You would have a hydrant in the end. Like I say, talking to Paul, all those things that he'd rather not have. It's one of those things. It's certainly it's less costly for both the town and the builder, and I think it serves the same purpose. And I think some people like that. I think the buyers would like that because it is not public. It's private, so they can go out and say, what's coming in here. Look, don't turn in here. Don't come in here.
I'm feeling like the cost and the convenience to the town and the owners is less of a concern than the fact that eventually you'd have to really cut into these lots.
Right.
I realize it cul-de-sacs for and more stuff for the maintenance department to take care of is an issue, but it's not an issue if it makes sense to do it.
Well, I think it gives you if the town road, we have the comfort level to know that it is going to be maintained in the winter. That if there was a fire back there, that the town is going to have plowed that road. When you're relying upon a private driveway with the private parties hiring out somebody, we don't know that. So there's the. I understand what their points of view, but I hope that you can understand what my points of view are, because we've seen these, and through the years they have had some issues, and I haven't warmed up to them as much as Jim has, I guess. I mean, we've done.
Well, I'm not saying it's not without.
I, you know, we've done them, but I'm not sure that when I look at this, I feel like that's really what I think we should be looking at. I think we should be looking at a town road. If they want to put these lots in there, it shouldn't be a town.
If it was to be approved, at, is it absolutely necessary that you have that second cutout? There's no way the state will not allow you to service five lots via that road?
That's correct. They're hard to
pass.
Okay.
They want the second cutout.
I'm not certainly not an expert in traffic related issues, but does anybody else foresee where that could be potentially?
Well, I think that holds. I think that
situation with the two driveways so close.
Well, I think that's a bad spot for a road anyway. I think that when I saw that being put in, I questioned, wow, on a hill like this, with the traffic that we have, certainly I agree with you that having two would even be worse. I mean, I certainly agree with that.
And I want to be clear. I mean, to Gary, the plan is very thorough. The revisions seem very appropriate. You guys have done your due diligence, talked to all the proper authorities. But having said that, to Gary's point, I could foresee this becoming more the norm, and I'm not sure that that's ideal. But I mean, I'm deferring to you.
Well, I'm here.
Was there a common driveway on Ken's property?
Yeah.
And but he did technically meet the lot requirements, Gary, because he made the flag shaped lots. He got the frontages on the.
He had
the
frontages too. Yeah.
Right. So he. He didn't have to come to ZBA because he provided 40 foot for that flag lot.
Yeah.
And then after that, he was allowed to have a common driveway at planning board.
Yeah, so he went through this whole process at the planning board level for the shared driveway. He has a maintenance agreement in place. He built to a certain standard for the driveway itself. You know, all that. He did all the same things, except he designed his lot layout so they were technically compliant.
Well, that goes to my concern. We talked about this, and just listed off the top, there has four or five of these. Now we're trying to add six more in here. I just go back to the conversation we keep having out in Ganter in those areas where there's lots of farmers who have lots of land. And if everybody can put in a private drive and pop up four lots, probably plenty of people who actually have the land size requirement to do that. So I think that's a dangerous precedence that we set without having any kind of zoning. Where do we allow these private drives to occur? How big do we allow them? When do we allow them? Is there certain corridors we're willing to allow them in? And certain corridors, perhaps they as a town, we don't think make sense. To the chairman's earlier point, if we have these popping up left and right, and there's 10, 15, 20 of these things in the town, that becomes a detriment to the town itself, because now we have a bunch of pockets and parts and pieces. We don't have any town that's maintained and is taken care of and is upkept. So I understand that's not your particular project, but if we keep approving these and keep approving these, then we'll have a dozen of these things going on Route 32, going down 197, we'll be everywhere you look. And then to both Kevin and Justin's earlier points, yes, legal agreements are good as long as the people are abiding by them. Our hands are tied to town, but there's still a safety concern. There's still a potential hazard to somebody in those houses. The other thing, with the cul-de-sac, and I understand a lot more sizable cul-de-sac would fit on this land if you had to lose one. So I guess where I'm struggling a little bit is, where's the hardship? Typically, when we do a variance, we try to do something like this, and for me, to try to figure why they give you approval for this one, but tell the other guy down the road, up around the corner on 32, why he can't. That would be my one, at least would give me some sort of solace, knowing that there was a particular hardship on this one. This was a special unique case. We had to do things differently. But in our conversation last time, I don't think that the hardship has been, it's not been shown, it's not been proven. I don't quite see where the hardship is for doing it the right way. I know you keep going back to Paul and the town and Paul and the town, but with all due respect, it's not his decision. It's the zoning board's decision. And if they have to do it, they have to do it. It's about safety, it's about the quality of the town, an attachment to the neighbors who already live there. It's not about one department super or another department super. It's about the town as a whole. And that's what the five of us here try to do, is to look at the town as a whole. So again, I do come back to, where is the hardship in this plan to do it per code and do it per the zoning code?
When we first looked at this, we looked at how we could get the lots there in that property. And we looked at having driveways out on Route 1. And we talked about different things that we could do. And Jim had told us about McKenna's property. And we looked at McKenna's property and we said, you know, do we want to run, do we want to have 40-foot of frontage on along 197 and every 40 feet have a driveway that comes out to Route 197? You know, to us, the minimum amount of driveways we can have there, the better off everyone will be. And what we're saying is, although you guys don't like them, the planning board seems to like them. I know that when Workies went in, we were there, and you know that was something the planning board was for. And I think this is a similar case. And if we decide that we want to go back and have 40-foot flag lots, and we go to planning board, the planning board would give us a common driveway to service lots. Mm-hmm. We'd rather not do that. We'd rather have some nice lots that make sense. The thing that we're asking for the variance from really isn't that whether we can have a common driveway. It's really if we can have frontage along a private drive.
Well, let me speak to my feelings about flag lots. That was, I think, the first recommendation I made to the town when they're looking at the zoning was that we look to eliminate those. So I understand it. So we don't like flag lots, and I think there's detrimental to the community too. But at the way the town's laws are written right now, they are acceptable. So we can't do anything about that. But this is something we can do something about.
An easy solution would be to approve it and kick it to the planning board and let them make the decision. You know, I think that would be easy. We're just thinking out loud, and I think all of these points are reasonable.
The issue about flag lots, Jimmy, correct me if I'm wrong, is a question of where the width of the property is measured. Am I correct?
Well, it's two issues. One is your dimensional standard for frontage, in other words, how the lot touches the road, okay. And then the other dimension that comes into play is lot width. Now, there's many ways there's several ways that can be done. You can have average lot width, or you can have lot width at the setback of the principal building. That's how we measure it here today, currently.
But that's an interpretation.
Yes. So, well, you know, to Kevin's point, there is ways that it would take some doing, and you really have to think through it, but there are ways in the regulation that you could define those things and set those things up, the lot frontage and the lot width requirement and all that, so that you, in effect, eliminate flag lots. It's not as easy as it sounds to do from a regulatory point of view, but I think it could be done. But it is tricky to do.
But that's not in front of us.
No, that's not in front of us.
No, that's a discussion for another time.
I only throw that out because he was talking about the McKenna and the flag lots and all that.
I can show you a subdivision that's approved off of Old Saratoga Road down a ways. They've got 8 flag lots that are like, they're like stems, mm-hmm. all aligned with one another, going up a slope. Yeah. And then they have a shared driveway that cuts across all of them, you know, to access the lots. And technically that's a compliant, those are compliant lots, but boy, it really is.
It's not a good thing. It really is. I mean, I think that, and I'm not speaking when I say that when we talked about looking at our zoning.
Right.
That was one of the first things I threw out. That we needed to look at how we could manage those.
You know,
that's beside the point.
There's various schools of thought on this. There's various reasons. You know, one thing that you know that the town has, I think, and by virtue of the implication of the way we administer the code here, like the two-lot subdivision, you know, and many communities do this, they do encourage, or at least try and not get in the way of, exchanges of land between property members, family members, you know, where kids buy a lot, you know, there's a big farm. I've seen it happen here, in my time here, at least a half a dozen times. You know, family members are selling, you know, lots to their kids and their grandkids.
Right.
And when you do that, you kind of get into these, funny lot configurations. Because it's a large lot that gets split up among family members and to meet the requirements, the flags start popping up.
The question, let's get back to, what is the question before the zoning board here? I mean, this is an area here.
It's an area variance because there's 1, 2, 3 lots that do not have proper frontage, meaning 40 feet on a public right of way.
Okay. So if we can deny that, and then the applicant can go and create flag lots for those three lots.
I'm not so sure. I mean, I'm looking at this, and first of all, you got your two primary lots out in the front. 1 and 5 years are shown. That they do have to maintain their average lot. You know, so they have to have a dimension here where the house can be built and the lot width for the district can be maintained. I don't know. I'm not a surveyor. I'm not a designer. But my sense is that you might be able to get 2 lots in the back. You may not get 3. You might. I don't know. I don't. You have to have somebody look at it with some skill to do that. But the layout appears that you might be able to only get a 4-lot subdivision here, not 5. And then you're going to have two of them be flags.
And then what we're going to do is we're going to go to planning board and ask for a common driveway for the 4 lots. But I don't know. To me, it seems like it's just better to have a common driveway that's between the lots. Doesn't split up the lots along the way. If we could do it, there could be 4 lots that have driveways that go out on 197, which is the biggest.
Well, I don't know if you're going to get through the state on that one here. Yeah, I don't know that you meet their separation requirements. That may be the other thing that hinders you from
that.
Because
I think it's not.
Because under what I just said. Lot 1 and 5 would have direct driveway to the 197, and then you'd have that third shared driveway for the 2 lots in the back. And those are 3 driveways, you know, bing, 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 right next to each other.
So we're only losing 1. We're going from 3 driveways to 2.
Correct.
Not going from 5 driveways to 1. We're going from 3 driveways to 2. So we're not getting this huge benefit by having less curb cuts. We're cutting out literally one residence. So it's not that conversation. It's again, we're not going from 5 curb cuts to 1. We're going from 3 to 2.
No, I think I agree.
That same conversation, as you mentioned, there's 6. You've had half a dozen already with these farmers and their families. And Rich, like right now, McKenna is being kind of used as a leveraging tool in this conversation. We approve this one, then both of these become leveraging tools in the next conversation. I think we're going down a dangerous road by breaking rules here without really having a good reason to break it. These lots are not subdivided currently. There's one large lot there that they're trying to subdivide. So, again, I fail to see the hardship, and I fail to see the true advantage here. Again, we're setting a precedence where now anybody with acreage can do this. At any time, they don't want to do it. I think it's a dangerous precedence. If the planning board is inclined to do it, they tell us to change as we do. But again, I can't control the planning board. I can't control the town supervisor board. But I do have one single vote in the zoning board.
And, you know, the other thing that we don't have is that we don't have a comparison of what it would look like with a cul-de-sac versus what it looks like with a shunt.
Right, what would the bones involve?
Then we can make a judgment of what the hardship is, but we don't have that.
Unfortunately, it's not the rules as we would like them to be. The rules are the rules. And I'm generally not a stickler on the rules, but I'm hearing from you guys who have been doing this a while that there could be some potential issues, and I can appreciate that. From Gary, I can appreciate, you know, this for those, for them makes the most sense. And I would be inclined to say fine, but I'm a little bit torn on that for my part. The plan, to Matt's point, where is the real hardship? I mean, and to Gary's point, it would be preferable just to see some dimensions as to why the cul-de-sac wouldn't work. And I respect...
Well, I'm not so sure it wouldn't. I mean, because the cul-de-sac doesn't need to be a perfectly symmetrical, like, exactly, you know, stem leading to, you know, a centered circle. You could offset the cul-de-sac into lot 4, because lot 4 has got the area to give up for the right-of-way, so it would be kind of offset or curved into that lot, and that becomes a smaller lot. So I'm not so sure that a cul-de-sac wouldn't fit.
I'm thinking it would, really, if you look at it that way.
That would alleviate the concerns for drainage, would alleviate the concerns for the maintenance, the safety. If you're doing it by the book, we wouldn't necessarily, you know, we would have that, and then the town would have to maintain it.
Yes.
That would be kind of like what we're looking for. And I agree with you 100%. That could be a V-shape, and we could fit a cul-de-sac, and we can follow the rules in this instance. The lots are large enough, the land is big enough, we can follow the rules. We don't have to create any variance.
The only real rule...
I don't think that we can get the lots in there with cul-de-sac because the road itself would be a lot wider than what we're proposing there. We would not have frontage for the lots that are in the front on Reynolds Road. I don't think that would bring us. I think we would probably lose 2 lots there, maybe 3, with a cul-de-sac.
Okay.
I don't know. I bet you you'll lose 1 lot.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But I'd like to see it. I mean, I'm thinking, I don't know. And we're saying I think, I'd like to know. One of the things we've learned through this process of being on the board is that we like dollars and cents. You know, you want to see it in dollars and cents and see, in actual figures what it is. What's this versus this?
Well, yeah, if you're going to talk of hardship, right, we have to, when we're looking at making, because we are breaking, we're giving permission to do something the town's book code can.
Right.
So when we're making that determination, the reasons to do it, one of the things is, as you said, hardship, where is the cost impact, what is, you know, how big of a hardship is it? I don't see that here at this point. And
to me, this sure looks like a typical small subdivision.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, there's nothing unusual about this. There's nothing unique. McKenna's had, they had wires going through, they had all kinds of hills and everything else on their property. It's different. And the place down at the end of Peter Dam, that was already there.
That was long ago.
This just looks like a 5.
And the one over on Mountain Road, remember, you said you just started. They wanted to put more lights on that and weren't allowed because of the issues with that.
And I think we did that to Sweet Silver on top of
the road. Oh, yes, that was another one.
They said no.
You're right.
And I think, you know, when it's this typical, if we get into allowing private driveways or just saying, you know, you don't have to have the road frontage. Yeah, I guess we run the risk of flagouts, which I don't want to see either, but...
No, I'm hoping we can work on that.
But I think we should be approving this.
Well, do we want to, during our deliberation, do we want to go to close the public hearing?
Do we have any comments from the public?
We didn't. There were no written comments either at the first meeting or tonight. I don't see anybody on here on the line, so there have been none.
let me ask this. Would you like us to prepare something that shows how a cul-de-sac could fit or what flat lots look like? Or is that not going to help you see what the hardship is?
I would feel better about it if I had something to compare it to.
Rather
than just saying no, I don't want to say no, but I would to Matt's point, I'd just like to see the hardship and see, okay, we're going to lose two lots or three lots. To Jim's point, maybe you won't. Maybe there's a way to configure it so that that won't be the case. And I'd just like to see it.
I would hope that you would give us, if you're going to do that, definitely look at a cul-de-sac, see if it's workable, because I would be much more comfortable having a town road going in there and having a lot of space to town roads.
I say I'd be willing to look at it. I would. I agree with Justin. I hate saying no. I don't like that. But the point is that this looks very typical until I see different. So I don't really want to.
You want
to
table?
I want this to be different than your typical 5x5 lot subdivision.
Gary, I still just so I understand too. Before we get off this topic, what happens with Area A and Area B in the hash?
Those are just going to be lot line adjustments that would go to the adjacent owner.
So which lot is going to be receiving that land?
The one Area A is going to the lot to the left, I believe, and Area B is paying as part of the subdivision. I think it might have something to do with drainage or something. But when he bought this property, they made that agreement that those lots would be put off to. Taken off by lot line adjustments. We did have, and I don't know that. I think we had that on the notes.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it before. I recall Area A, but I just don't fully understand where B's going yet.
And when was this lot purchased? Oh, recently, probably 4 months ago. I only bring that up because again, go back to the hardship. This land was built, it was drawn this way, this particular lot was this size, it was in the zoning that it's in, and there was a strategic decision to be made to buy this piece of land. So, as far as hardship, I'm not going to entertain monetary as a hardship. This is a profitable venture where people are making money. We're talking about maybe making a little less money, but still a profitable venture. So, when I think of a hardship related to money, I think of either a family that grew and can no longer kind of afford the means and methods. I think a hardship, I look at, again, strange lot sizes, lot designs, zoning changes. My in-laws had their zoning changed on them. Nothing they knew about, but it happened. That's a real hardship that you can't control. It's, again, a strategic decision by someone who purchased a piece of land for a profit. And so the fact that you're making a little bit less profit is not what I would consider a hardship in this definition. So we're looking at that cul-de-sac and going through those things. The loss of one lot does not constitute a hardship in my eyes. Again, this lot has not changed. You bought it with these parameters and it was bought under these zoning laws. So that was known when we came into it. It was all known. It's not a hardship, it's not a surprise. Mm-hmm. That's a strategic decision.
All right. So I guess the question.
Yeah, the question is, do you want it just to table this again and come back with some more information on what we just talked about?
Well, if everybody's saying that there's nothing I can do to show you that, you know, it would take lots away, that it would be difficult, it would, you know, then I don't want to waste the money.
I don't think
you know, we're going to try to do something there. But if you're thinking that you want to see that in order to make a decision, we'll do a sketch of the two different options that we have there, which is with the five lots or with a cul-de-sac. And I think you'll find that the cul-de-sac is going to eliminate some lots. And with the flat lots, it's going to be an undesirable development of that land is going to be, it's something that we can do, but I think that it's going to be undesirable. I think having the way that we have the driveway now is much more desirable, which is why we came here in the first place. But,
well, I mean, when we look at area variances, we're looking at weighing, you know, it isn't like this has to be, you know, it's not a use variance, it's an area variance. So we can weigh
discretion.
So we can, in a way, you know, if we can look at other alternatives and say, well, this is the best alternative, that doesn't mean I'm going to say yes. I'm just, you know, I'm more.
We're always open to look at, if you've got more information, if you did those two drawings and they show something to us that we realize, because we're weighing this issue. Yes. If that gives more weight to work towards what you're saying, then it very well could. I'm not saying that I wouldn't agree to it if I'm given good reason.
Okay, well, I tell you what. Let's if you guys can table it,
okay,
that would be good. Unfortunately, somebody from the owner could be around tonight, so he isn't at to ask.
Okay.
And what I would do is I would go back to them and say, the ZBA tabled it, and here's what we have to do. And if they decide, no, we want to go to the planning board, then you won't see us next month.
Okay.
Well, that's certainly fair.
Yeah, that's okay.
Right? If you get an application from me, we'll be back.
Okay. All right.
We can ask no more than that, and I'll make.
Well, Gary, I would like you to close the loop. If a decision is made to go to the planning board, then I would like a formal withdrawal of this application, just so we're aware.
Yeah, we would have to have
that. Yeah. I'll do that.
All right, so I'll make a motion that we table this until the next meeting.
I second it.
Would you leave the public hearing open?
Yes, we'll leave the public hearing open.
Would you call the board? No discussion. And you're sad, you're comfortable with that hearing, right?
Yes, I am. Yeah, Justin seconded.
Okay.
Please.
Okay. Mr. Farrell?
Yes.
Mr. Elms?
Yes.
Mr. Simmons?
Yes.
Mr. Manning?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes.
Okay, thanks a lot, Gary.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay. And good luck with it. Take care.
Okay, so we have the solar law.
Okay.
A little unusual, but I think nonetheless worthwhile to get your input on the proposed law.
Does the town have any idea when they're going to bring this out?
Well, as I understand it, they've been doing a lot of work on it for the better part of a year than the town board has. And I initiated it with an initial draft, but after that, I've been to one or two of the town board meetings where they've taken this up, but they've discussed this at least a half a dozen times, if not more. And Carla's been doing a lot of work on it lately. And she is also available by phone, by the way, if we need her. We come to a point in our discussion tonight, if you have a question that she can answer, she says she's available by phone. That said, this started, it originated out of several different laws, as things typically do when you try to draft a law. There is a state model law that was a fundamental basis for this and is the basis for many of the municipal solar laws in the state. And then what we did is we tried to go out and look at like communities with like concerns to borrow, you know, some provisions from them and make a law that is best for the needs of Murrow. So, with that as a backdrop, that was the impetus for the first draft. And then the town board, in their deliberations, have been changing and revising various sections as they've gone through it.
And Carla's been the keeper of the document since that time, and she has now the draft in its current form, which is the one that is before you. And so it's a typical section of local law. It's intended, as you can see by the numbering, to be inserted into the zoning code. So you would have, you know, purview over it as the Zoning Board of Appeals. Any variance from this would come to you, either as the typical fashion, area, or use. It does start out with some specialized definitions that are unique to this law. Terms like abandonment, decommissioning, building integrated solar, all these various things that, all these terms that come into play with this law are defined here. And then some things, like principal use, is a term here that means one thing as opposed to what it might in the standard zoning code. So that's why that term is specifically defined here in the manner in which it's used in this section of the zoning code, if this were to be passed and put into the zoning. So the definitions continue at the beginning of the law. There's a section on permits and transfers. I think that's pretty straightforward. Now, where this does begin to track with the, I think this is in the state model law, is this idea of setting up tiers of solar energy systems. Tier one, as you can see here, is of the smaller scale, residential scale, if you will, solar systems, meaning the roof mounted, which is very common. We're seeing more and more of it. We even have a specialized building permit for it. And it's actually, from a zoning point of view, it's the least intrusive way to provide solar to a residence rather than a separate ground-mounted utility out in the yard. Then it becomes more of a concern from a regulatory standpoint.
Jim, on that, can I just ask a question about that definition? It talks about building integrated solar energy system tier one.
Yes.
And it specifically only is roof mounted, whereas in the state model law, it talked about building integrated as well. Mm-hmm. Why was that not part of it?
That's a good question. That was not something I was a party to in terms of that discussion. I know there was a lot of discussion on the integration of panels into the roof, you know, how high they could go, should they go beyond the peak, how far should they sit off the roof surface itself. That kind of thing was discussed, but...
I would think it would be pretty complicated.
It's
very detailed, believe me, in there about how high it can be.
Yes.
It has to be below feet.
There was some fair amount of discussion about that.
There's a great deal of that.
The state model law talks about building integrated, which is, you know, it could be a wall, it could be under a skylight, it could be a number of other things.
Right.
And I think that's complicated if you're retrofitting a house, but if you're building a house, you can do all kinds of things.
You can do a lot of it. It wouldn't really be. They can be built right into the house, into the wall, into the nest.
And I would think it would be simple enough just to include that.
I didn't read the state, I have to be honest, I didn't read the state rules, but the tier two, to jump to the tier two solar,
sure.
Where did they come up with the 110% of electricity consumed on the site over the previous 12 months? Why would, and most people that go to the expense of putting in solar, if they can generate a little bit more and it goes back to the grid, it helps to pay for it. If you're limiting it to the 110% use, you're pretty much eliminating that possibility. So I kind of question, is that something that the town has come up with? And what would have been the reasoning behind it?
Yeah, see, I think that is, if not part of the... state model law, and I got a copy in my office, so I can run down and get one.
I don't believe it is.
Then that was a standard that was picked up, you know, from another community's, you know, law.
Because I'm wondering, and reading a little bit after I saw this, I think this may eliminate some of the opportunities that residents have to put in
put in the solar and actually have it be cost neutral for them, because that's what the big push was.
So including the 110% standard could be prohibited.
Well, I mean, limited. I'm not sure that. I mean, I'm not saying maybe it should be 130%. I mean, I guess what I would be looking for is what was the research and what was the, like, see the reason behind it. Because if I could generate 200% of what I used last year and send that 100% extra to the grid, that's going to pay me back for the cost of my solar panels, and I'm going to be having electricity for free. I mean, I don't get why we would limit that.
Mm-hmm. 110 is part of the state.
Is it really? I'm sorry.
No, I don't know why, but I mean, they want you to go to the next tier to be able to have more higher level of approval.
Review,
I guess.
That could be. Thank you for that, because I didn't know.
My printer.
Okay, so that answers that question.
That answers that. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, you have the tier two there, and that's defined, and that's basically the point of departure from tier one. And then tier three are simply those systems that do not qualify as tier one or tier two.
This may sound really uninformed. I skim read this. This stuck out to me with respect to tier three. The solar system shall not be permitted to be constructed on prime farmland. I don't have an understanding. When I read the description of prime farmland, that seems to me that it would be any of the farmlands around here. And if this says that these systems and farms, so to speak, shall not be permitted, it seems like we're really limiting the potential for that development. Mm-hmm.
This goes to the core of the crux of the matter with this law and this issue. And I know there's been a lot of discussion about the degree to which, you know, solar energy systems should be allowed in the ag district or mm-hmm. parcels within the ag district. And that is the crux of the matter.
It goes on to talk about soil composition. It stands to reason that if it's prime farmland, it would be the ideal soils, as defined by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep, yep.
So it just, of all of the stuff that I really did not get all of this, certainly not committed to any kind of memory, but that really stuck out to me as being potentially very limiting.
Absolutely.
And I can't imagine why we would not necessarily want to pan ourselves into that type of a box.
I would agree with that.
So what would you have as what would you like to see then?
I would just refer to other municipalities that, you know, are they in compliance with this? We need to be clear as to what is defined as prime. Who defines that? Are we able to define that as the town of Moreau? Or do we have to strictly adhere to USDA, DEC, et cetera, Army Corps of Engineers? I'm just unclear.
Well, I'm thinking it was too generic. I think what should be available on farmland should be more farm. I mean, if you've got a 200-acre farm with 160 acres of tillable land, and you're not going to build we don't want to cut all the trees down to put in.
Right.
So there should be they're quick to put the 110% on the amount you can produce above what you consume. So you should be able to have a percentage of how much land could be designated to solar panels against the size of the tillable land.
I don't know if it's a situation where, you know, again, we're concerned that these are going to pop up everywhere. I mean, we're limited to the agricultural lands
I'll tell you what initiated the motivation behind this law was, right now we have no solar treatment at all beyond what has been the interpretation, and that is right now in the manufacturing districts. Power plants are listed
allowed use, like, for example, in the M1.
Okay.
And the prior determination, I think, was made by Joe Patrick, and I agree with it, given the limited, you know, the limited tools we have to work with, is that a commercial-grade solar energy generation, like a large solar array, is a power plant. It meets that definition. And so, therefore, the only places they're allowed in the town are in the M1 and M2 districts.
Right. And we want to open that up.
And there's been primarily from, well, I don't know if primarily, but I'm aware of at least a couple of farmers who are really interested in being able to use their property, for a solar generation farm.
That's also partial.
There's been some, and then the other factor that comes into play with these things, if, in case you haven't, you know, heard this, you know, and just deliberations on the subject, they can only be feasibly located within a certain distance of a major transmission.
Right, it has to be near.
And so, well, as it turns out, Moreau has got several, and they happen to be in our ag district.
And that's what this, as you said,
that's the crux of the matter.
And as this is written right now, it would be my understanding that those farmers who are interested in converting some of their lands would not be able to do that. Is that correct?
Yeah, this current draft, the way this is drafted, is very limiting on that.
So I think that is a problem. Is there any, I did not read, is there any benefit to the town as far as a monetary benefit or a tax benefit?
Yes, there is the very, one of the latter sections here is the pilot section.
Okay, I did not see it.
I didn't understand why that was part of it.
No, it's coming from the solar provider to the town.
Right.
And the justification for that is that I think there's limits as to how much these things have in or value, or and then therefore responsible to pay real property taxes. So this is a provision by which the town is realizing some revenue from this property use. It is essentially a commercial use of the property.
So the town can actually realize more revenue than having it just taxed as farming.
Correct.
I think that's excellent. And I think that.
And I got to tell you, in my community in Glenville, we just enacted a law, and I was going to share this with Carla because we just upped our solar law or improved it. We have a pilot provision in there. And in addition, we're extracting a recreation fee as well.
That's a good idea.
Because our subdivision numbers are way down, our rec fee revenue is way down, so this is a method by which...
I think that is in the town's best interest to develop some of these lands. And if we were going to limit it, I don't mean zoning board, but all interested parties, it should be limited to maybe perhaps a certain percentage of the property. Yeah. And you would limit it along those lines rather than the soil, et cetera, because I've got to think if we had these folks come out and test it, all of these lands would be considered prime farmland.
I think it's way too restrictive.
No,
so
that's just extremely restrictive, and I get trouble because I already told Jim, I feel the town is going to miss a huge opportunity with Keeper South property. I think they should approve that and allow them to put that in. It's going to be, both, as I said to Jim, I've lived here my whole life, that soil down there is not that good for septics. It's not like up here. It's a different soil. If you develop that into a bunch of houses down there, you're going to have septic issues. You know, you get the water issues, you've got traffic issues, and if we put a solar array in there, it's going to generate revenues for the community. There will be nobody going to school. It won't impact traffic. It's like a no, to me, it's like a no-brainer.
I'm aware of the water quality issues. My father-in-law and mother-in-law live not far, so I can appreciate that.
It's a golden opportunity. You've got high-tension power lines running right there. You've got a very large piece of property that has sat dormant for a long period of time. Honestly, we don't need another huge housing development to add to the traffic. I was almost going to video record with my phone 5:30 this morning when I was in front of my house putting my mail in to go and get my truck to drive out, and the 14 cars went by, and then I went out with the truck, and the 25 cars went by, and it's like constant traffic. Here's an opportunity to utilize a space that's on a main highway that really should be more than residential, and you generate revenue for the community,
and
clean energy.
Also, give some farmers an opportunity to stay farmers.
Yeah.
I think if they can, that's part of it.
You need to be looking at those kinds of things.
Using their land for something a little bit more profitable, maybe, than farming, and still be able to farm.
Well, back before the coronavirus, when they had the big meeting, and I was here with the farmers and stuff, I got up and said, when I go to Burlington, I drive 22 way.
Right.
You go past farm after farm on 22 way, they're huge, milking 300 head of cattle. And then in one section of their farm, there'll be some over 50 acres of solar panels. When I drive by that, I don't find that any more unappealing than seeing 30 houses built there with three cars in the yard. So I
didn't see where I'm trying to review any. It says here the one provision I found within 149.99 that sets up the provisions for tier three systems, the big ones. The under C site plan review standards item 3B. In the R5 district, lot coverage may be up to 40% of the gross area of each lot on which the systems are to be located. Systems components shall not be located on any designated wetland area or wetland buffer. But I didn't see anything about limits on prime farmland. These are not numbers. It's on page 4 of the 149.99 numbering.
So on page 1, Jim, and I do now remember the 40%, and now that I remember, that's something that perhaps we did increase up to. Yes. Certainly this is above my pay grade, but it seemed...
It's not above your pay grade.
That seemed very, again, it seemed limiting, that 40%. I do remember seeing that now.
Well,
but on page 1 of that, it just says...
Page 1A.
Okay. Systems shall not be constructed on prime farmland or statewide importance. Yes.
There's a real long list there of properties that can't be constructed.
So those would be my only concerns. I think that the plan and some of the verbiage in here about decommissioning, and you brought that up to tell on one of our meetings, that's a very important consideration as the technology evolves.
Absolutely.
What would that entail as far as traffic and any detriment to the land, erosion, those types of considerations? I don't foresee that being a problem. So I think all of that is well thought out. My main concern is that this verbiage here is very limiting.
Okay, so my note, just so because I'm going to be sending these, and I'm going to copy you on the email message that I send to the town board as a result of the discussion tonight.
Yeah.
My first three things so far are, why was the building integrated solar not included in Tier 1?
Yeah.
That's a question. And then restriction on prime farmland should have, or the restriction on prime farmland is too restrictive. That's a comment, correct?
Yeah.
And then the percentage of utilization at 40% is too low.
Anybody else have any thoughts? Is that...
Well, just in terms of the restriction from prime farming, it's not just the prime farming, but there's a whole list of farmland types.
So,
it's too It would be the whole list. Cut down on some of it, and like I said, like you're saying about a percentage, you know, only a percentage would do this for that of each lot, but.
What do you think, Scott? You haven't heard?
No, I'm soaking it all in. I've read this many, many times. I have, and I'm almost borderline wanting to recuse. I have a good family friend that's one of the biggest farm landowner in the county, and I know that he's here often, Mr. Killian, and I think he's been handcuffed, and kind of what we're discussing here. I think he, you know, has that right to be able to use his land.
Well, he was at the meeting.
Yes.
And I've known the family for a long time.
Yes.
And
yeah, Pat's been in to see me.
Well, he's trying to save the farm.
He has several methods to generate revenue. In addition to solar, there were a couple of things he was trying to achieve prior to that. So it's been an issue for him for a while.
Yeah, I mean, he wants to save the farm with the family land. And I think that's wonderful because I believe that we need to keep the farm land.
And I hope this is a way to keep it, not to destroy it.
And to be able to.
So beyond that seems to be the true crux of the matter is the utilization of prime farmland and the percent use of farmland.
And maybe one more thing is, and you guys can speak to this, but you brought up the whole issue of decommission, or as the technology evolves, would it be appropriate to put some requirements that technology needs to be upgraded?
I don't think it would become less. I mean, but it does say that.
Yeah, the decommissioning plan.
I think the decommissioning plan touches on so much that if the I think by the way it's written that if the systems they had became not profitable and not working, it was much better systems. They would be almost forced to either because it couldn't shut it down because if they shut it down, they got to take it out. So they either have to upgrade it or keep it going.
Right, and that would really fall under the purview of the landowner to make that decision.
Well, I think in most cases, it's not going to be the landowner. It's going to be the provider where the lessee is.
Yeah, it'll be the sole provider. That's what I'm saying. I mean,
they usually lease these lands and then they install their
equipment. And they maintain all that, the equipment. And I believe that, by the way that was written, and if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, I'll shut up, but the way I read it, it seems...
I can still put that in as a comment. I mean, we can encourage it. So as technology evolves, upgrade the equipment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chances are they're going to go out of business if they don't.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, perhaps...
It might be a thing where, you know, they come in to amend their site plan or something like that, where, you know, because... It could require this different system components. I don't know.
There were safety issues too.
Yeah.
Maybe safety issues.
So I have those four comments then. Is that representative?
I have a few nitpicking comments.
Can you send me those? If it's something like that, can you email me those?
I could. I mean this is important. It talks about the last sentence here says excess concrete used in construction sites not to be buried or left on the surface in active agricultural areas. I think we need to strike active agricultural areas.
Yes.
That should be anywhere.
Oh, absolutely. You want to make that anywhere?
Yeah. Pick up your mess.
Very good point.
That's a good catch.
He's very good about those things.
I'm happy to be.
His attention to detail.
He's very good with detail. Yes.
And when they talked about the standards for the planning standards for tier three systems, they didn't include anything about electrical diagrams or whatever. Which is part of the state model. There's a whole thing about that, which I would think the planning board would want.
Okay, so
you'd want the diagrams for the
as part of site plan review.
Just like you have diagrams of the cross section of the road, et cetera.
Electrical.
The infrastructure.
And include references from state model law.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Talking about electrical diagrams. And one last thing, I'm sorry, but when it talked about ground mounted, the definition of ground mounted, it just says for on site consumption. It should say, I would assume ground mounted solar panels are also for off site construction or consumption.
So what was that again, Gary? I thought I was writing your practice. Say that again.
When it talks about ground mounted.
Under definitions.
Under definitions. Ground mounted. It says primary purpose of producing electricity for on-site consumption. I assume it should be on or off-site.
I agree.
That's just
well, yeah, with the ground mounted especially. Yeah.
I mean, especially
if we're sending it to the grid. Then
yes. Well, no, I don't think it's a matter of fact that you can. Anything you generate on site, you can consume. It has to be put back into the grid. You get an offset credit, but you don't. That's a common misconception that whatever you generate from your like your roof panel goes into your house. That doesn't happen.
No, right.
It goes so back into the grid, and then
yeah, I think that's just an oversight in that definition, but it's an oversight. We don't want to see it.
Nobody, you really can't. It's impossible to consume on site.
Well, it isn't impossible.
Well, yeah, I shouldn't say that.
It's very expensive.
Yeah, it's not as easy as it sounds.
Right, the battery systems and all the controls you have to put in there, it raises the cost of the whole system exorbitant.
Yeah, the state by law talked about storage batteries on site, and I didn't see that anywhere in our law.
Okay.
For Tier 3, and I don't know if that's relevant, because why would you want to store it on site?
Well, is that allowed? If it isn't in there, will that be allowed? If I wanted to build a house,
well, I think
make my house solar independent, I could do that, and it would be with batteries.
But this has more to do with Tier 3.
Yeah.
Well, what's implied here is Tier 1 and Tier 2 are to be a residential scale,
right.
And Tier 3 is the large.
The large scale.
So, I don't know if it's important.
All right. Well, I've got eight comments.
All right, appreciate it.
If something else comes up,
everybody's comments.
Before I'm going to try and get this written tomorrow and send the email off to the board. Mm-hmm. I'll certainly copy you on it. But if you think of something tomorrow before noon, shoot me an email.
All right.
I'll be happy to include it.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for your comments.
Is that so? That concludes the discussion on the floor log?
Yes.
That concludes.
Yes, during the meeting.
Okay, let's have a vote to that effect then, so we
all in favor.
Yes.
Aye.
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 All opposed.
I think Matt's already went to bed.
Okay, we're all set. That's the end of the meeting.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Matt, for chairing last time, too. I appreciate
yes.
Good night, Chris. Thank you.
I said that. He had to hear my tirade. I had to hear really just like a year ago because I said so much. This town has cried forever that they've never had any business. And the reason this town has never had business